Good, thanks very much, and it's wonderful to be here this evening. It was excellent video, and in fact, many of the pieces that I was going to allude to are, you know, visually represented for you. So I'm going to put a CAT perspective, or Colleges of Applied Arts and Technology perspective on it. The colleges, in the first instance, are somewhat different than universities. The universities are set up individually. And the colleges, the 24 colleges across the province, while they're separate and distinct employers and they have their own separate boards, government, the colleges, or the Ministry of Colleges and Universities, and you know, the cabinet basically has their thumb on the purse strings. So over the years that the colleges have existed, when governments have asked colleges to respond to a need, where universities have resisted and screamed and yelled, colleges have tended to, or college presidents have tended to, obediently comply, which have set up a history of cuts in the college sector, and yet we still say everything's just fine, and our graduates are wonderful, and you know, we can do more with less. So now we come to this juncture of the double cohort. Buildings are being built, largely to super build, and some classrooms are being built, but from our observation, what is being built are facilities for high-end specialized program areas. I work at Sheridan College, by the way, in Oakville, and in our arts area, and one of the areas that is being expanded is our theater arts program. Now, the area I know that we have already in theater arts works quite well, but we have this massive structure going up. I don't know, we can probably house 5,000 people in it to watch a performance, I guess. So one wonders where the average person is going to access post-secondary education. I don't see a lot of expansion going on in our business programs or our applied science programs, those kinds of areas. You can build a building, but what are you going to put in it? Historically, we have purchased equipment and been responsible for that. Over the past 4, 5, 6, 7 years, largely the Tory years, we've been driven to be more entrepreneurial, to develop partnerships with business. And those people in education, I think largely this room is, you know what I'm talking about. The bond between private public sector relationships, when we have 3M or IBM loading us up with computers, what kind of criteria are they applying to, like, what's their kick out of it? What do they want? How do they want to affect our curriculum? What do they want to have with the learners, our graduates that are going out? That gives us concern. So we have buildings, we have equipment, and the huge concern we have, and was pointed out in the video, from our sisters and brothers in the university sector. What about the staffing? We don't see any super build staffing budgets happening. We see an aging faculty. We know that the demographics of our colleges, we're going to have roughly 30% of both our support and academic staff retiring over the next 5 to 8 years. And we don't see a large initiative by the colleges posting full-time ongoing positions in both our support and academic units. What we do see are part-time, short-term arrangements. It's sort of like a just-in-time teacher or a just-in-time typist or a word processor. And that all has to get to collective agreements, and I suspect most of us in this room are attached to somehow a collective bargaining relationship. So it is really an undermining of workers' rights, collective agreements, and it leans to a private sector model, a privatization of education in this province. We see colleges moving from the classic semester methodology of curriculum delivery to 3 semesters. The doors are going to start to open up in the summertime. This is an idea. Once again, we don't know who's going to be there to teach or to support that teaching activity. But planners, administrations are figuring, okay, they're coming, we better make some room for them someplace. And that is some of the notions that are being floated out. We are already crowded, particularly in program areas that are successful. And, you know, a lot of our programs in colleges have been designed for smaller groups. 25, 35 is probably the average kind of class size or group size. I've seen now at Sheridan, and I go across the province and other colleges, those same program areas are now taking 60 to 80 people in the same space and trying to learn with a limited amount of technology and limited amount of staff time. That is an issue and a concern. When we accept a double cohort, I guess we're going to be parking them in the parking lot someplace. We don't know how it's going to happen. We've all been to the Midway, you know, the Canadian National Exhibition, and you've gone down those flashy dark rides, you know, with the lights outside, and they encourage you to get inside, and you think, "Why? I'm going to have a wonderful ride on that ride when I get in there." So I pay my couple of $3, and I get into the cart, and away I go, and all of a sudden it's dark inside, and I go get whipped around for about a minute and a half, and I get shunted off. I didn't see anything inside; nothing happened. But I get shunted off out into the back alley, and that was the end of my ride. And I paid my money, and I guess I did take my chances. We worry about colleges becoming a dark ride for learners in this province. Students are only in our institutions for generally 2 years, a 32-week a year, and we're bursting at the seams now. And what is going to further get cut to move these people through? There's another saying. We've all seen that movie, with the baseball movie, you know, if you build it, they will come. Well, we're building it. We don't know what we're building and what we're going to put inside. We do know that they're coming, though, so we're just hoping it's going to work out. From our OPSU perspective, we have long stood out for accessibility, affordability, and quality in post-secondary education. We support a commitment to full-time positions over part-time positions because that instills a level of quality and commitment in the learning activity and the supporting of that learning activity. We support the restoring of appropriate funds to our post-secondary institutions, both at the college and the university level, and in fact, all levels of learning. And we support keeping it public, because we very much suspect that all of this is about an element of our society that is big time money, and if somebody can make it a profit out of it, then somebody's going to try to. So people like us have to defend that erosion of our society, and we just all have to stick together. We're on the edge of an election. I too will be an NDP candidate in Halton, and I'm just thank you. And I'm just so excited and enthused that people will come together on a Thursday night at a university here in Guelph, and you know, spend some time and particularly on the mic, on the floor mic, and share their experiences. I think if we all, you know, we will be all leaving here this evening with a common front, and. You know, let's get rid of the Tories and let's take back the agenda and get back to good education, excellent education for our learners in this province. Thanks very much.
It is impossible to deny the dire financial position that the University of Guelph and indeed all other Ontario universities are faced with. We as students see very clearly the impacts that years of cuts in government funding have had on this institution. Cuts at the federal level have affected the post-secondary education sector across the country, but the cuts made by Queen's Park over the same time have led to serious underfunding at universities in this province. In an effort to offset the impact of these cuts, universities have transferred the cost to students in the form of tuition fee increases, to the point that virtually every dollar cut has been made up for in the form of tuition increases. But when one adjusts the revenue brought in by those increases to take into account the mandated tuition reinvestment, universities in the province are still operating with roughly $200 million less than they did at the beginning of the 1990s. When presented with these facts, it becomes impossible to deny the problems being faced by this institution. At the same time, however, one must look critically at the approach being taken to address these funding shortfalls. It is clear that the increases to tuition have not been made up for the money taken out, and at the same time, those increases have had a very dire effect on this campus and its students. It is vital that increases to tuition be examined historically. Since 1991, in Canada, have increased by an average of 126% and 140% in Ontario. These increases have far outpaced the increases in the cost of living over the same period of time. And while students are forced to work part-time jobs to pay for these increases, there has only been a marginal increase in the minimum wage. In summary, the cost of education has risen far beyond the rate of inflation, and the ability for students to pay for these increases has not risen at the same pace. These increases also bring with them a profound effect to the face of this campus. The increases tuition at this and other universities have begun the creation of a two-tiered education system in this province and country, one where only the rich can afford a university education. As of 1998, the upper half of the income bracket in this country occupied 70% of the spots in universities. Studies done at this very institution show a steady decrease in the number attending the University of Guelph from low education backgrounds as fees increase. There's also been a direct comparison made to low education and low socioeconomic status, perpetuating the two-tiered problem. As fees continue to increase and fewer people from the lower income brackets attend university, the discrepancies that already exist will only become more severe. These issues also affect the diversity of this and other campuses. Members of visible minorities, immigrants, and Aboriginal people are disproportionately represented within the lower income bracket in this country. As the increases have an effect on the number of students coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, these increases also serve to shut out members of minority communities in this country. These problems are also more evident at the University of Guelph, given the nature of the institution. The University of Guelph is a residential university, meaning that the majority of the students who attend move to the city to be able to do so. As such, one must also examine the additional costs that make up the total cost of education, including rent and food. When examining these factors, it must also be noted that rental rates in the city of Guelph are on the high end of the spectrum provincially. With the total cost of education considered, it becomes clear that tuition increases at this institution only serve to further increase the burden on students. These increases also have a drastic effect on the lives of individual students. The federal government estimates the average student debt as $25,000 for an undergraduate Bachelor of Arts, essentially negating the choice of those students to enter the field of their choice on graduation, as that field does not pay extremely well. While these needs-based financial aid is essential within the system, restrictions are placed on the provincial government on eligibility for OSAP have led to a 40% decrease in the number of students receiving aid, with fewer students able to access aid programs to those who do not pursue post-secondary education cites the high cost as the number one deterrent. So basically it ends there, and the last part is a pitch to the Board of Governors to not raise our tuition, which they did. I'm just going to talk for a couple minutes now about what I feel like the effect of the double cohort and how it's going to change the face of the Guelph campus. I'm the local affairs commissioner for the Central Student Association. That means I deal with housing, transportation, and other day-to-day running of the student government. But from my perspective, personally, and this isn't what the CSA is saying, but I don't think this university is prepared for the double cohort on any level. Over the past number of years, I should have been seeing more professors being hired, more TAs being added, more classrooms being added, and an overall betterment of the services at the University of Guelph. I haven't seen any of that. The 1,000-seat classroom complex over there, that's a joke and it's a disgrace that this university built something like that, because it's not going to really educate students. Having 600 students in a classroom with one professor talking, that's not an education. It's not. And that's what the administration of the university would like everybody at the school to believe, but everybody knows it's a lie. Secondly, not many professors have been hired in political science, which is one of the departments that I study in. There have hired maybe 4 professors. This is while in the department they've cut first and second year seminars. And they've cut third year seminars too. The problem is that in first and second year in political science, you need to have TAs teaching seminars so everybody learns the concepts. They took that out. In sociology, which is the other department that I'm in, they're thinking about the same thing. So and from those two departments, that's very similar to what's happening all across this campus. On the housing issue, nobody knows what's going to happen. In September, there could very well be homeless students at this campus. Not that there already aren't, but there would be hundreds of them, because Guelph already has a crisis housing situation with the vacancy rate something at 1 or 1.3%, and you're adding in another 700 students. The system just can't take that. And even if it does take those students, it's going to push low-income people out onto the streets. And that is an effect of what this government has done, which is disgusting. I think I'm going to leave it at that. I'm getting pretty angry. So. it's too bad that it looks like the election's going to be held in the spring, because I'd love to mobilize the students in the fall, but I don't know. I'm going to do my best to help out. But I've been and I've argued with Brenda Elliott before, me and her one-on-one.
And
I've done it a couple of times. I'm shocked that she let me get in. But anyways, thanks for having me here.
I have a question, especially about colleges, particularly since you said that they're looking at opening them over the summer, and there's a move with this government in particular again to have more apprenticeships in kinds of jobs and skills that we would never ever believe would end up being apprenticeship type programs. Do you think that the idea might be coming forward that there will be apprenticeship after apprenticeship after apprenticeship, and they'll all be co-ops, so that for 4 months they can put this group of people through and throw them out into work for 4 months while they throw in another group of people for 4 months while they're at school and pitch them out, and then throw another 4 months for the people, and they'll have 3 sets of people paying over the course of a 12-month period, getting 3 times the money they used to, going and having those students then go out to work at apprenticeship rates, which are always lower than the regular rate for that kind of skill. And it's all at part of the process to reduce the wages and push everything down as far as they can and squeeze out as much profit as they can from every institution and every building in this province.
It wouldn't be beyond belief. One of the colleges in our system, George Brown College in downtown Toronto, is huge in apprenticeship programming. And I'm fairly close with those people down there. I know that they're ramping out, trying to expand out a lot of their apprenticeship program areas. And, once again, the buildings are full and reaching out into the community. So if they can, hide people all over the place and keep the revolving doors going, then it can very well happen.
David? I'm really glad I came today because it was really informative for me to be able to look at the post-secondary perspective. And what strikes me is that, what this government does, not only in education, but in other areas, but look at the education system and they always seem to target the most vulnerable. And in elementary school, I think that group is probably students with special needs that have been targeted. And when I look at, well, this is just one aspect of secondary education, but I'm well aware of the fact that the level of opportunities for adults at the secondary level has practically, or has been greatly diminished. You know, and those people who formerly would have had a second chance to get an education have lost that second chance. And then looking at the post-secondary level, the idea that really hit home to me tonight is that education, or post-secondary education, is gradually and increasingly becoming the domain of the haves of our society. And when you look at public education, right from kindergarten right through to post-secondary, one of its greatest values is its equalization value. The fact that it gives everybody, regardless of socioeconomic background, the chance and the opportunity to succeed. And I know when I was growing up in university, and it's a long time ago now, but there was nobody who didn't go to university because they couldn't afford it. Like, nobody. And I always thought that that's part of our country, that's part of Canada. And tonight I've learned that, no. Well, I mean, I kind of knew it before, but it just hit home tonight that, no, there's a lot of kids out there who, because they don't come from families who have a lot of money or families that are willing to go into debt for their education, they just won't get a post-secondary education. And that obviously is going to impact on them for the rest of their lives, but also it impacts on our country because you've got this great human resource, huge human resource that's not being tapped. It's very sad.
People for Education has been looking at the curriculum and the fact that this government has not really developed a curriculum for what used to be known as the general level student and the basic level student. And so consequently, they've been having a very difficult time in the new applied programs. There was a government report put out. It was a government report that was released in October of 2002, last October, predicting a substantial decline in graduation rates for secondary school students. They noted that under the old curriculum, the general level, in 1998-1999, 19% of them were missing three or more credits. Under the new curriculum, the applied curriculum in 2000-2001, that had jumped to almost 34%, so it almost doubled. And they're predicting a substantial dropout rate, and this means, of course, those students will not be going to the community colleges to take the applied courses there. They won't be eligible if, in fact, they would be able to because of the grade 10 literacy rate, and many students aren't going to be able to pass that and will be prevented from applying to community colleges.
I have a two-fold question, and one of them is, from all your points of view, when you've got all these extra students and a number of them, just like in the elementary secondary panel, with the special needs students, so by virtue of age, for one thing, also by virtue of the fact the students that are leaving secondary are extremely stressed, they've already gone through very, very tense with all this new curriculum and no support. So you're getting some very needy youth coming to you, right? And they're also a year younger. So, and at the same time, you've been slashed in terms of staff. Now, two things. Do you see unqualified people, for instance, that's certainly happening in elementary education, people that are not qualified as teachers, coming in and filling the gap? And the second question, what do you see as your role, especially from the student's point of view? How are you going to support these kids and from the staff? And so, what are you going to do for them?
In the university sector, who we're going to see that is actually going to be in the classrooms teaching is we're going to see the TAs and sessionals being used more and more. We've already seen an increase in the number of students that they are responsible for, and I think that it's going to be an unbelievable, unbearable amount of students that actually get no personal attention because of the workload of the TAs and the sessionals.
Thanks. In the colleges, what we're seeing is a huge ramp up of something called peer mentors. So it's students maybe in the next year in the same cohort being paid about $6 an hour or $7 an hour to make themselves available in a particular academic area to help out their first year class, basically. So that's sort of what happens with the learners. With teachers, as I alluded to earlier, we see a decline of full-time faculty. We see a replacement of part-time teachers. And also we see an ever-widening use of technology. So if the institution can put the program or the course on a CD-ROM product, or we can launch it on our website and do it through the internet, well, that's what we're going to do.
At Guelph, I've seen like a lot of I guess it'd be like student-supported learning, and it's kind of like this insidious way to like get remove teaching assistants. But what happens is that like in the residences, they have like cluster areas where like people in like one like academic program like live together, and like then like that's used as a support mechanism to like help people out. Also, there's like a lot of like unpaid labor, so like peer helpers that like assist in like tutoring, and like a lot of programs that are based out of the library where that it's like unpaid like labor by undergraduate students. I think the double cohort is like a pretty big experiment, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think the administration knows what's going to happen. Like it's really frightening, and like there is going to be unanticipated consequences for the double cohort, but like nobody knows.